This is the Agribusiness Report. Our guest today, Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading in Chicago. First off, Tyler Cousins, Director of the Livestock Marketing Information Center.
What the report showed us was that actual cattle on feed as of April 1st was just below 11.6 million head. That's actually down about 0.5% from a year ago. That falls within line of pre-report estimates. Analysts are actually expecting it to be down about 0.3%. So fairly in line with expectations there. Similar discussion there on placements. Came in at just over 1.7 million head. That's actually down just over 7% from a year ago. Analysts were expecting it to be down just under 7%. But still within that range of expectations there, you know, probably what's driving a lot of that decline there is still some of that continued decline of just overall cattle flows from Mexico as that border remains closed. So kind of one of those trends that we're seeing here for the better part of year.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Our guest today is Bob Maurer. Bob's with Manduca Trading in Chicago. Bob, let's talk row crops.
A relatively quiet start to the trading week this week, with corn prices up just a couple few cents, wheat mixed, soybeans off a couple. It's kind of a wait-and-see mode, I guess. Markets are looking for some newer, bigger catalyst to really drive it into the next price range, that being higher or lower. One by one, though. Starting with soybeans, really, the driver on the upside has been the strong crush, which continues to happen month in and month out, it seems, until there's some kind of, plateauing of the appetite to crush soybeans in anticipation of any kind of biodiesel developments that might happen from the government and setting of standards and such going forward. I mean, right now that's the anticipation. So we'll see how that works out. So soybean crush is obviously a strong driver in the market. You got the firm soybean oil from that. And then you've also got some energy market spillover, at least on the day-to-day. Now, this is an ebb and flow thing, right, based on the headlines that are hitting regarding what's happening in Iran. So it could be fabulously bullish one day and then fabulously bearish the next day. So it's one of those things where it's just wait and see. But for right now, walking into this week, a little bit of strength going on from that particular aspect. Working against the soybeans, generally weaker China import outlook. There's also some uncertainty about some additional U.S. export business. And then there's also the possibility of increased soybean acreage if corn planting stays delayed. And we'll touch on that in a second here. Back into the China story. Right now, that tends to be a little bit of a headwind, where China's ag outlook, they projected lower soybean imports over the next decade or so, as it is basically pushing for, you know, more domestic production. For March, China's soybean imports from the U.S. were down year over year, and imports from Brazil increased. So they're offsetting any kind of demand here that we would normally see in the U.S. with the supply down there in Brazil. So Brazil's still a formidable competitor. Touching on the domestic crush, that still remains a key support feature. As I mentioned, the demand is still strong. We got the record monthly crush pace and supportive margins, and that's in anticipation, again, of a renewable fuel policy support expectation that the market is hoping is going to work its way into its market. In terms of corn, while we've got strong demand there still, we've got fertilizer concerns and then supportive energy backdrop. Kind of the same story with soybeans in terms of the energy markets, where it's really just the ebbs and flows of the headlines. So for the moment, stepping into this week, like I mentioned, with soybeans supportive. In terms of things that are working against the market, you've got fund liquidation, also mostly non-threatening weather. I know it's dry here and there in the United States and maybe a little bit too wet here and there in the United States, but net-net expectations are for, on average, things to be non-threatening. And then also, similar to soybeans, you've got those large South American supplies, and that's also helping to keep rallies in check. In terms of the weather, just zooming out a second here, in specific how it relates to corn, planting is moving forward, although some of those rains that we've seen in the eastern and lower Midwest, they're still slowing field work. But the farmers here in the United States are amazingly adept at getting the crop in the ground whenever the weather is conducive. So that typically isn't a problem, but we'll keep an eye on it for right now. Fertilizer supply concerns are supportive. That could be something that's down the road for those who hadn't already locked in their fertilizer. So we're just talking about those on the margin, basically. It could be an impact down the road there if fertilizer prices stay elevated, because it may either cause them to either switch into another crop, which would be bullish for the market, or maybe cut back on its fertilizer requirements as much as they possibly can to still get a decent yield, but maybe not the top end of the yields, which would also be supportive. Demand is still strong. If you look at the export sales, that's a good thing. And then again, like I mentioned, the one factor that's really weighing against the market is South American soybean production, both in Brazil and in Argentina. In terms of wheat, well, the drought really remains the dominant bullish driver in the plains, that is. There's dryness across the western and southern plains. That's continuing to stress the hard red winter wheat crop. And then don't forget, we're going to be planting the hard red spring pretty soon, too. So that's going to work its way into the thought process of the marketplace in terms of how good of a start the markets or that particular crop is going to have. The recent freeze, also added another layer of crop stress. So there were sub-freezing temperatures in parts of Kansas and Oklahoma Panhandle. That caused at least some concern for spring growth, so we'll keep an eye on that. And then just the poor crop conditions. If you look at the crop condition indices posted by the USDA, you can definitely see that there's major issues in big producing states such as Kansas. Also, zooming out a bit here, in terms of global weather, there's some beneficial moisture. It's reaching parts of Europe and the Black Sea region, so that leans itself a little bit to the bear side of the equation. Whereas for Australia, however, it remains dry in many places. So those are a couple ongoing international weather developments. In terms of just looking at the charts and seeing how things are trading of late, obviously for soybeans, the market's basically been, regardless of whether you're looking at the old crop later month July or the new crop November, we've been stuck in about a 20 or 30 cent range for a number of weeks. So it's begging for a catalyst to break out one way or the other. In terms of the corn market, well, we've given up on the best levels of the year so far. We've fallen back about 20, 30 cents, and now the market's just kind of hovering into a relatively stable area. We'll see what happens with the July and the December corn futures. Again, it's kind of looking for a catalyst, too. And then whereas for wheat, though, it's pretty much sitting up there towards its highs, regardless of whether you're looking at the KC, which has a comparative advantage over the Chicago wheat futures at the moment, or the Minneapolis. You know, those are both, all three of those are pretty much staying up towards the top 20% of their ranges. And really, that's indicative of the rather averse weather that we've seen so far. If we get some precipitation and it's meaningful and it's good coverage, then maybe things can turn around and there's going to be a percentage of the crop that is definitely going to improve from that. But if we don't really see anything consistent or steady, I would imagine that these markets are going to stay at the lofty levels that they're at, just to discount the fact that the expectations for yield and production would be lower.
We're talking with Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading. It's the Agribusiness Report.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Guest today, Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading, Chicago. Bob, let's focus on cattle.
Yeah, to start out the week, a little bit of a setback in the cattle futures, a little bit of a modest move to the upside in hogs. Coming off that cattle on feed report that we saw on Friday as it relates to the cattle market, that is, the thing leaned friendly. On-feed numbers came in slightly below year-ago levels. Placements were a little bit lighter. Marketings were relatively strong. So net-net, you would have thought it might have had a little bit of a bullish tint to it, but that's not where the market moved. So what could be happening there, right? A couple of the positive side things for the cattle market. Cash cattle, we'll call it steady, in the upper 240s mostly last week, so that's a good thing. The ongoing tighter year-over-year beef supply, that remains structurally supportive, even during these corrections, in my estimation. And herd expansion seems like it's more limited, right? And one of the things, too, which is kind of interesting, is that with this ongoing drought that's has developed in the plains, you would expect that to be a significant headwind in terms of any kind of herd rebuilding. So we'll watch how that plays out. Some of the more dominant negative factors of late, spec liquidation, funds still remain heavily long, feeder cattle and live cattle. And as long as we continue to see any kind of push to the downside in any considerable fashion, you might see them hit the exits, which would add to the momentum to the downside. To that point, a little bit of technical damage also. Carcass weights, it's well known that they remain historically large, so that's another just negative impact, although I guess it could be argued that the market's already known that for quite some time, and the market still has held up pretty good in the live cattle futures. And then I guess the main thing, though, of late, box beef values have softened slightly, so in terms of the wholesale output, in terms of pricing, we're seeing a little bit of softness there. So we'll see if that continues to be a development. One other aspect, there's been some talk about loose windows in terms of when and if things might start to reopen out of Mexico for feeder cattle. We might start getting that supply again. So, you know, there's chat right now that about when an announcement might come, but the details of the announcement are a little bit, you know, iffy. So really, it's just one of those things where the futures market does what it's supposed to do, which is factor in all available information. And I think at the moment, it's looking at that as a potentially bearish element. So we'll see how that plays out. As for hogs, I mean, just briefly, near-term bearishness still, even though we had a little bit of a bounce today, we've seen some fund liquidation. I think that's playing out pretty well, though, so maybe there isn't going to be as much going forward if the market can stabilize. Supply remains ample. Cash hogs have not really strengthened much at all. Packer margins, though, have improved, and the market is technically becoming oversold. I don't necessarily always buy into that oversold thing because I think you can stay oversold for quite some time. But nonetheless, for those technicians out there who look for that, might be giving them a reason to start biting on the long side of the equation.
Talking with Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading, on the Agribusiness Report.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Special guest, Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading, Chicago. Bob, contact info.
Yeah, you can pick up the phone, give me a call. Number is 312-987-2053. If I can't get to the phone, I'm likely chatting with customers, so just leave a message real quick, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Otherwise, you can reach me via email at bmaurer@manducatrading.com. That's B-M-A-U-R-E-R @manducatrading.com. Or come visit the website at www.myfuturesadvisor.com.
That's Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading. It's the Agribusiness Report.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Dan O'Brien's a Kansas State grain marketing economist.
With the run-up that we've seen yesterday, the uncertainty, if you're in an area and that doesn't get, it isn't damaged already or maybe damaged further from wheat, you know, this market volatility may give you some new crop forward bid opportunities. So we shall see the highest bids, $6.30 uniformly all the way across in Topeka, Hutchinson, Salina, and other areas closer to 580, 585, $5.79. That'd be in Pittsburgh, Garden City, Colby. So the market speaks $6.30, given the uncertainty in the market as of this moment. And again, that's up. Again, new crop futures were up. I'm looking at the July contract up 18, September 16.5. So we'll see what happens in terms of the potential weather damage and how much that might move the markets for wheat.
It's the Agribusiness Report.